let me tell you the way the world is. Nothing works right. Relationships don't work right. People don't work right. People make podcasts. So why should Zombie Takeout be perfect?
Welcome to episode 428 of Zombie Ticket, the B-movie and cult movie show. I'm John.
And hello, I'm Scotto.
Before we get to this week's movie, we've got some voicemail from Bodo. Bodo left this for last week's episode because we didn't announce that we were switching to Outland until the last minute. So he wishes us a happy Halloween, just wanted to explain that.
John, Scotto, it's Bodo here. Happy Halloween. Hope you guys had a great day. Or days with the blue moon. Runaway. That's weird. Quality. Pretty much foretold the future except for everybody smoking everywhere, which, you know, never happens nowadays. Not bad. Not good. But the only good thing that came out of this is when I looked it up on YouTube, I got to watch a documentary with Joan Jett and the Runaways. So that was amazing. I rate this movie about 2 brains, maybe. If I had half a brain, I'd be twice as smart as I am now. Love you guys. You guys are the best. Have great holidays. Peace out.
Thank you, Bodo, and you're welcome for the documentary, or for leading you to it.
Right, and of course we had to switch out last week. So I mean, Sean Connery passing was like
of course you had to do a Connery tribute, and
all hands on deck.
Yeah, and good call on that one. You picked Outland.
Yeah. I was worried, of course. You know, we kind of like roll the dice with some of these tributes, but that one actually was a success.
And on to this week's movie, which is from 1984, Runaway. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by rock stars. They're actually not actors, no matter how intimidating they look.
And also brought to you by the Runaway Squad, for when you just don't feel like shutting off your own damn computer. All right, so we are in... They don't have a placard that tells us we're the future, but you kind of figure out soon enough, this is the future.
It was pleasantly low on exposition.
Yeah, it was. Everyone has a robot in their home. Not just an Alexa, but a robot that actually does shit. And which, of course, we're still heading towards.
We'll get there.
Crichton probably thought we'd have been there by now. And we're really close, but not quite.
Yeah, this was written and directed by Michael Crichton, who wrote Jurassic Park, just to get that bit of trivia out there.
And so the trouble is, of course, there's a hacker, and he somehow gains access to people's robots and puts a chip into them, and they wind up becoming killer robots, so much so that the BattleBot can wield a gun.
Well, that confused me for a bit until I realized that robot was designed to do things around the house, particularly open doors, so it is probably pretty articulated.
Sure.
You know, enough to fire a gun.
You don't expect out of one of those low running back robots to be able to fire a gun, though.
It was basically an oversized rat droid with a hand.
It was a Roomba with arms, pretty much. We have our cop who has a new partner, but it's kind of weird because they don't act like they've just met. They just kind of, he starts out as this, you know, just, okay, we're on the case, we're doing this stuff, and, you know, keep up with me sort of thing. And then he kind of gets into this weird thing with her, and is he into her, is he not into her? She's into him, but you know, he doesn't get she's into him, and he's trying to keep it professional, but he's not trying to keep it too professional. And it's just.
And again, I say,
can you hear me rubbing my temples while I'm trying to explain this? And I don't even mind romantic subplots, but this one was fucking annoying.
If it's irritating you.
He's also a single father, a widower. When you realize that, and he's a cop and he's going into these dangerous situations, and it's kind of treated as an exciting thing and not a, hey, you could have yourself an orphan there. It was kind of like, weird. All right.
Yeah.
But,
and the annoying kid actor who was limited to one scene last week had, what, two or three this time?
He had about two or three. I don't think he was quite as annoying as last week's kid actor.
Oh, God, no, way worse to me.
I mean, he kind of likes razzing his father a little bit. That was a bit more realistic. So he has a robot himself that pretty much is taking care of the parenting while he is out unexploded, you know, bombs and shit.
And likes to play who's on first.
Yeah. So, of course, he figures out the plot right away, and he's after this guy. And they cat and mouse each other for a while. They're literally on a highway of battle bots trying to blow up their car. And, I mean, it's obvious he has vertigo. So, of course, where does one think the climax of this will be?
Of course.
We should have said, based on a song by Iron and Wine, you know, such great big heights. But Alfred Hitchcock works better. So they have the big showdown high up in the sky. Some idiot put an elevator control panel underneath the elevator, and hilarity ensues.
Yeah. And one thing I did like was how there was action during the opening credits. That was nice. We didn't have to sit through an opening credits sequence. Speaking of the opening credits, always nice to see G.W. Bailey's name pop up.
I'm like, wait a minute. First I thought he was Captain Mauser, but no, that was from like the later police academies. But no, Lieutenant Harris. And he's actually playing a police captain.
Yeah.
And I had to look up, like, was this before police? But no, this is the same year Police Academy came out.
Right. But I just like G.W. Bailey as an actor. He's just great in everything he does.
He's played a lot of cops.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's kind of that type.
Yeah.
And, you know, the first call they go out on is to this farm to take care of these pest control robots that looked a lot like Tonka trucks, if you're old enough to remember Tonka trucks. And the scene where they were chasing them down was basically like chasing a pig.
Right.
But I did like how the movie kind of just subtly showed that robots are commonplace and instead of using this big, long expositional monologue.
Yeah, it's a little jarring at first. You're kind of like, wait a minute, is this some sort of special, you know, thing? And then you realize, nope, this is just the future.
Yeah. And then within the first 10 minutes, we go from this cute scene where they're chasing this, you know, Tonka truck looking robot on a farm like it's a pig, to this robot that's killed two people and is threatening an infant.
Right. And I'm not sure, you know, how... There's so many problems with that scene. First off, the guy is a robotics person himself.
Yeah, the father.
Yes. Why would he have somebody fixing his robot for him?
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
building a robotic daughter. Anyway.
My brother-in-law is a programmer. My brother-in-law is a computer programmer. He's not going to have some other guy come in and fuck with his shit.
Right.
This robotics guy who has robots in his home is not going to say, oh, yeah, let's call in a professional that we'll pay to fix. Because that's kind of what it was. And, you know,
like
Gene Simmons Thompson, as if he's like just the maintenance guy.
I kind of got the impression, didn't he work for the company, though?
Yes. Yes, he did.
So, I mean, maybe he just got the chip on the cheap. Well, no, because we saw the footage of Simmons showing up at the doors to repair guy.
Right. That was the thing. They called a repair guy, or no, they didn't call a repair guy. He showed up as if he were a repair guy, and they just let him in and planted the murder chip in the robot, which I don't know.
But in that scene where they're trying to stop the robot before it kills the kid, I like the eerie music behind like the floater camera scene, although they could have named that better than the floater camera. It was a flying camera. Well, it was a drone.
It's a drone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much nails how a drone's going to be, which is kind of surprising. It's like a few propellers shy. Yeah. But I mean, imagine 10 years from now, drones are going to have fewer propellers anyway. So.
Right. And also, that's the first time we see Simmons in that scene. Doesn't have any dialogue. And I thought, okay, he does play a good villain. Right. Until he had dialogue.
Right. He has the stare. It works really well. And then when he talks, it's like he's a step more intimidating than Gilbert Godfrey.
Yeah. Also, the news crew in that scene are incredibly stupid. I mean, I know if it bleeds, it leads. But that was a bit too much. They have a robot on the loose with a gun in the house. He tells the crew, it can hear your broadcasting because it's electromagnetic spectrum. They continue to broadcast, and they even send a camera guy into the house.
Right. And then, no, spoiler alert, the camera guy dies, of course.
I was very happy about that.
But they don't even, he doesn't even call for help or anything once he gets the robot neutralized. Mm-hmm. It's just, oh, I'm coming out with the kid. Wait a minute. Didn't you guys see the camera feed of the caravan dying?
Oh, one quick note about Simmons. In his book, Sex, Money, Kiss, Simmons said that director Michael Crichton's casting of him was based primarily on an audition where Crichton asked Simmons to stare at him for about a minute without making any facial expressions. Apparently, Crichton decided that Simmons looked menacing enough and cast him as Luther.
I mean, you should have to run some lines. I mean, it was it was like, why is Luke Costello wearing a wig?
There was a bit in Voda's voicemail that I couldn't decipher. It sounded like something about a wig. I couldn't quite understand what he was saying, but I think he did say something about a wig.
I don't know. I mean, that most likely wasn't. I doubt it was a wig.
No, I think that was just his hair.
Who knows?
Mm. And as I mentioned before, I did not like this movie as a kid. And I don't think it was for the reasons I didn't like it. I don't like it now. But I am rather surprised that it's a sci-fi movie with robots and a laser gun that I didn't like.
Yeah.
And a guided missile gun. I dig the guided missile gun.
There's so much more they could have done. I think, of course, the problem with it now is that it's just such a predictable movie that you can pretty much tell exactly what's going to happen in the movie way before it happens.
Back to G.W. Bailey, one of his first scenes in the movie, he owns with one word. They're working on this robot. It blows up just as his partner comes in. Then, he grabs her. They hit the deck. The robot goes boom. They cut to Bailey outside of the office. He just says, assholes. Owned that scene with just one word. Also, when they go to the construction site, then the next call, they have to go to a construction site where there's this stacker robot that's dropping these giant bags of concrete. And Jack, Selleck's character, doesn't want to go up the elevator because he's scared of heights. And he's standing really close to where the stacker is dropping these bags of concrete. I mean, it's not going wild. It's not chaotic. It's dropping them in the same spot every time.
But he's standing close enough for the impact to get him.
To cover him in dust. And, if there is a little variance, he could get hit.
Sure. But there's a lot of... I think Selleck started out with a strong performance, I felt. Like, I believed him as a cop,
Right.
but as the movie went on, you could see he was just lost in the script and direction, really, because the director would be like, no, you'd stand away from it. Or, like, when he's just neutralizing the robot in the house from to save the kid, he stood with the robot between his legs. Like the robot holding the gun, he
Between his
stood
legs.
over between his legs. I say my notes, the gun goes off between his legs, roll credits, the greatest movie ever made.
This was Crichton's last science fiction film. I didn't even know he directed films. I know him as a writer.
Yeah, I didn't either. In fact, I didn't realize he directed this. I thought it was like his story.
But as much as I'm saying I appreciate the lack of exposition, the film does pretty much give you its mission statement. Jack has this big monologue about how, people are imperfect, so machines are imperfect too. The line you took for your intro.
Yes.
It's basically the mission statement of the movie.
Right.
It was just kind of odd that they just handed it to us. Also, Luther says he's working, when he shows up as the repair guy, shows he's working, says he's working for Acme Robot Repairs. I got a kick out of that.
It just seemed like the big picture was handled very well in this movie, but the details are really lacking. Like the heat-seeking gun, it looks really cool. How does one control that?
Well, apparently you program it ahead of time. I'm not exact. Maybe you plug it in.
Exactly.
It's got to have like a USB on or no, back then it would have been like serial.
Right. They're talking about you can put it to specifically one person's body heat. How does one pick up one person's, signature? And I mean, it was nice at the end there, the heat that could mess up with the so it wasn't just like, an imperfect weapon, that could just, but, how would one control that gun?
I don't know how you program it on the fly. That's odd. Also, okay, so the bug droids that are so common in the film, apparently they hit you with acid.
Right.
But the first time we see them attack someone, they jump on them, they look like they inject the person in their chin, and then the person bursts into flames. Did the acid burst into flames? Because that's two different chemical reactions entirely.
I don't know, and Tom Selleck got stabbed with one and nothing really happened.
Well, I mean, his face got messed up, but.
He got it in the hand, didn't he?
Oh, that's right, he did. Yeah, nothing happened.
Yeah, he's able to like catch, a pole and like hang and just and then pull himself up. It's kind of like, oh, so it's not like he's injured at all now.
The first guy that gets attacked by them, he's injected with acid and he bursts into flames. I'm just not sure how that works. I will say that I think the most compelling movie and the actor in the movie was the voice of the Vectorcom computer.
Oh, the
They go. He's checking the Vectorcom, the company that makes the chips that are causing the robots to become killers. He's going through their systems, and he talks to this tech nearby about the voice of the computer and how it's so lifelike. It just kind of amused me that they're making a big deal about the voice of this computer.
I'm thinking also of how bad Alexa really is.
Yeah.
Holy fuck. When at first you're kind of like, oh, are they listening to us and recording everything we say and whatnot? And then you actually try to use the Alexa, and it doesn't understand shit.
I have a Google Home. I've used it a few times. I don't use it on a regular, but it seems okay.
I just have an Alexa in my Fire Stick, and it's just like, what? You want to look for it's like way off.
I've tried to use the voice on my TV, and it doesn't work. Siri on the computer, same deal. Doesn't work great. I'm not big on talking to devices. I'd much rather type, so.
Yeah, same here. So that's all I would think about when they're you're talking about the voice of the computer.
In this, although just after that, with the first we've seen, we meet Jackie, Kirstie Alley's character. He, you know, there's a runaway off runaway robot in an office that he ends up taking out with a chair. I got a kick out of that.
And yeah, it's just that whole scene too, where suddenly he's like, wow, she's attractive and stuff. It was like, wait, what the hell is going on here now?
Although, in that same scene, I have to wonder why Kirstie Alley actually had a career given her acting. I mean, yeah, she was attractive, but her acting, why? Then we finally get a real scene with G.W. Bailey, the chief or the captain, about 50 minutes in. I mean, it's the cliche, you know, I've got, you know, X amount of time till retirement police captain scene, but still, it was fun.
The angry, captain.
Yeah.
I can't believe you guys. It's like, wait a minute, you didn't have any backup there.
Yeah.
What the hell? And you're blaming him for him getting away?
And as much as Simmons' performance underwhelmed me, I have to say I gained a lot of respect for Cynthia Rhodes as an actor. She plays his partner. She was really good.
And I think she, I think that the two of them could have been pretty good, if they had a director and a script that made
I mean, I
sense.
generally like Selleck as an actor, you know. I was prepared to like him in the film. Yeah, but he did go a little off the rails because of probably Crichton's direction.
Well, right. Like just having that line of like, oh, you're like. She's attractive and like, oh, I'm gonna go and do something stupid and try to get the robot, myself. None of that made any sense.
No.
But then you like that he gets back to playing detective or
Right.
interrogator, and you realize what he's doing, where he's trying to get stuff out of her.
Also, Stan Shaw, who played Marvin, his kind of second banana in the office, another cop, has had a very interesting career. With the exception of 2001 to 2012, for some reason, he's worked steadily since 74, but never really developed a name. I mean, I know I've seen him in a ton of other things, but I would never know his name.
You kind of wish he had more in this, actually.
And I'm sure there are people who see his name and react like I do when I see G.W. Bailey. But, you know, he's one of those actors who's just worked a ton, but you never really hear about.
I mean, one of the scenes that he was in though was a huge what the fuck, because they were playing around with the missile, the mini missile, just fucking barehanded, just putting like.
Well, they
Just
froze it,
fucking
then
with
they cut
it.
it open.
Freezing and cutting it open. Lighting up, putting a lighter up in front of it. It's just like, wait, what? Guys, it's an explosive. No one's wearing any protective gear or anything.
Yeah, there was a remarkable lack of protection in this film.
Gloves to go over a crime scene. There was nothing.
They go into this scene where they're stopping a meeting between Luther and a bunch of other people, and no Kevlar.
I'm not even sure what that meeting was supposed to be. What was he?
Some
Was he
kind of arms deal, I figured.
with like prostitutes? Like, I mean, what was that?
But you know, they're getting in the way of this meeting, this arms deal. I figured, no Kevlar. No, she gets shot with the missile heat-seeking gun bullet. Fortunately, it doesn't go off and blow her arm off. It's a dud. But well, not a dud, but it just didn't trigger. But yeah, shouldn't there have been Kevlar involved?
Oh yeah, totally. Because he wore something to go into the house to try to be protected against that, and here it was just, oh yeah, we're just gonna go in. Like, wait, what?
Also, they suddenly, for some reason, crowbar a psychic in. He's arguing with the captain and about the case, and the captain insists that he talk to one of their psychics.
Yeah, I think that Creighton believes that's what we'll do in the future too. I don't know.
Again, I sigh. And
I like the psychic was doing the bullshit. Luke, it's an old
Yeah.
name. Just
Lucifer.
going down L names, Lucifer.
And actually, the only thing I remembered from when I saw this movie as a kid, when I was like 12 or 13, was the scene when Jackie, Kirstie Alley's character, is getting scanned for the bugs and she had to strip. Literally the only thing I remembered. I did like the car chase with the lock-on robots. That was nicely done.
And I guess it is realistic that they wouldn't give him enough people to protect them since they really didn't give enough backup in the first place.
And the bit with the elevator and the climax was a nice take on Vertigo.
But why would the panel be under the elevator?
It was a nice tense action scene. I did enjoy that. And as someone who was also afraid of heights, it definitely tensed me up.
All I think of is Galaxy Quest. Who would put that there?
And then at the end, of course, he kills Luther. But
Yeah.
then, he goes down to examine the body to make sure he's dead.
I was gonna say, wait a minute. He doesn't kill Luther.
Well, no, well, he facilitates Luther's death.
Luther lacks what's it called? The very simple thing when you're dealing with deadly things or computers, an override. You think somebody that would be that smart would have a little remote that would just, okay, stop them.
But Luther's laying there after getting t killed by the bug droids. Jack reaches down to make sure he's dead. He just kind of springs up, hisses, and then falls back down dead. It was just ridiculous.
With all that acid pumped into him.
Yeah. And
What?
then, of course, at the end, they have to crowbar in the romantic subplot.
Fuck. They didn't just crowbar it in. We had to watch them make out over the
Yeah,
credits.
I skipped most of that.
With the sparks coming down of the back like it was a metal video.
Yeah. By the way, it was set in 91 based on Ramsey's age, which was revealed in his birth year, which was on a computer screen.
Wow, I knew it was too soon set,
Yeah.
But the other thing about the makeout scene at the end, think about that. They are just feet away from a dead body and possible killer robots that could
Yeah.
still be left operational.
Yeah, they killed Luther. They weren't deactivated.
Right.
So, yeah.
That was just, it was just that kind of attention to detail in the movie that was kind of like, why wouldn't they think of that? Why would they just be like, oh, it's all over now. Let's get it on. Like practically next to his corpse.
Yeah, like literally, like maybe 2 feet away.
Yes. Hope there are no dead killer robots still alive here.
And he had
Man.
just sprung up and hissed weirdly, well, even though he was dead.
I think it would have a brain and a half if, like, in the middle of that makeout session, a robot springs
Oh,
up and
yes.
attacks, and like the movie comes back on, interrupting the credits of them fighting off
I
robots.
would put it on the rec list, or I would recommend it if they had done that.
Totally, same here.
Okay, no sequels or remakes, of course. On to brains.
On the brains.
Yeah, I was hovering between a 2.5 and a 3 for most of the movie. Then that ending happened, and it's down to a 2. I'm right there with Beto.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty close to you. 'Cause I'll give it the half just for seeing a lot of where robotics are going to be in the future. But yeah, you need to be able to write a script and direct a movie, though, and cast a capable actor to play your villain.
Yeah, two and a
Two and a
half.
half.
Yeah, okay. And what have we learned?
We learned that Cheech Simmons should have never taken that makeup off, ever. What the fuck was he thinking of taking that makeup off?
And I learned that G.W. Bell, actually, I learned a couple of things. G.W. Bell can own a scene with just one word. And I could happily go for the rest of my life without seeing another child actor perform.
Think of how great this movie would have been if Steve Guttenberg were in it, though.
Oh, yeah.
And Winslow, you know.
Michael Winslow would be all the robot noises.
He could have been the villain.
Oh, yes. And doing the voices of all the computer noises.
Yeah.
That would have been five easily.
Yes.
All right. That's it for Runaway. Until next time, we'll be reviewing Lust for Freedom, back on our B-movie bullshit for arguably the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Depending on whether you consider Hackers a B-movie, it's debatable.
I do.
Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.